This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey all you heroes, hawks, heralds, crows, pirates, and wardens. Welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we unpack, discuss, and galaxy brain about all the lore behind the Dragon Age series.
We are so excited to bring you this podcast. Every episode, we'll be talking about a different topic in the Dragon Age universe. From character deep dives to exalted marches and elven gods, we will cover it all.
There will be spoilers. And always remember, swooping is bad.
Hello and welcome to the Dragon Age Lorecast, where we talk about Dragon Age and its lore. I am one of your hosts, Austin, also known as Teacup, and I am embodying my future hopes for the summer by wearing a Hawaiian shirt that none of you can see, but I was promptly made fun of it by everyone I encountered today.
I don't understand. Actually, I'm just unclear if your Hawaiian shirt is in hopes that we're taking a vacation, you and I, or that we'll get Dreadwolf news, because I don't know how Hawaii relates to Dreadwolf.
Hawaii doesn't relate to Dreadwolf. It's about my vacation.
Oh, okay.
Our vacation.
I mean, hey, you do what you got to do to make it through these next couple months, but Alternatively, you could just make a vacation playlist and listen to the music. But just a thought.
No, this is the only way.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not here to talk about vacation or Hawaiian shirts. So maybe we should talk about some Dragon Age.
I think you should introduce yourself too, because I didn't give you a chance.
I'm Shelby or She Cup. I completely forgot that I had not introduced myself. So yeah, we're the hosts of this show. If this is the first time you're ever listening, welcome. Let's get into our topic for the day, which is we're talking about Valisleen today, which is a pretty big discussion point in Dragon Age Inquisition, especially if you romance Solas. If you don't romance him, you may not have any idea what we're going to talk about today, but there is some important lore behind this topic. So before we get started with our fun facts, Austin, do you have any thoughts or things you wanted to add?
Here is the thing about it, and I'll tell the story about the Valisleen. When I was early starting in on Dragon Age and I was play as Dalish elves or do that, I would make my Valisleen so like transparent and not like bold, because I detested like facial markings or facial tattoos in video games. Like even in Skyrim, like I don't ever use the war paint. I mean, I've gotten over that a little bit, but I mean, still, like most of the time I don't use any kind of marking. So I already like had a detest for the Valisleen because I just didn't like the aesthetic, but I have since gotten over that.
Okay, but why do you have issues? Also, not gonna lie, this makes me want to go out and get a face tattoo just to spite you.
Okay, I will love you with a face tattoo.
he says with a grimace on his face.
I don't know why. I find it distracting, even though, like, it's not like when I was younger, I found it distracting. I understand now that, like, it's part of the lore and part of the, like, world. So the people in there wouldn't find it distracting. So that's where I kind of go. But, like, younger me was like, I don't like this. I don't want it to be there.
But you don't find other tattoos distracting, like on other parts of the body, only on the face.
Yeah. But like, even like when I am.
That's illogical.
Look, I didn't say it was logical. You asked for my thoughts on the Valisleen and I shared them. I delivered.
That's fair. However, that also doesn't mean I'm not going to make fun of you for things that don't make sense.
You know what? My shirt and Hawaiian, my t-shirt and Hawaiian shirt don't match. So I'm all about not making sense today.
Okay, well, then let's get into the fun facts. So there are a few. The first thing to know is that Valisleen's, like, translation, whatever you want to call it, is literally blood writing, which makes sense. It's basically a tattoo, and that's what a tattoo is. Also, Fen'Harel does not have an associated Valisleen, which will be explained later on in this episode why, or you can go back and listen to the past two episodes on Fen'Harel. We go into it in detail there. But this one, I think, is this next one is probably the most interesting one to me. And we don't actually know why this is, but we do know that worshippers of the Forgotten Ones, specifically, those are the ancient elven bad gods, not the Evanuris, the ones that came before the Evanuris, who were banished away for being evil. Their Valisleen, the ones who worship them, have Valisleen tattooed in crimson ink. So we know that Valisleen is not necessarily something that's unique to only the Evanuris. This may be an older practice. We don't have all those details yet, but that's something lore-wise, that's interesting and important to keep in mind. So my last fun fact is that there are three elves that we meet in Dragon Age across multiple games that have unique Valisleen, and that is V'Lana, Serani, and Meryl. So V'Lana and Serani are sisters that you can meet in Awakening, and then obviously Meryl is a companion in Dragon Age 2, and they all have unique Valisleen, and we're not exactly sure who or what that Valisleen is tied to.
So, just a little thing. I did read, I don't remember why I was on Meryl's wiki page, but I was at some point. And apparently, the writer of Meryl, who is, who wrote Meryl? I can't remember. But they apparently said that it's Mythal.
That's interesting. But we still have nothing in the games that confirms that.
Correct.
That is interesting. I think the writer for Meryl is Mary Kirby. So, like, she would know, obviously. She's the writer. But I would love to have kind of, like, an in-game explanation of, like, why they have something different, why some of them look a little bit different than others. I think we can kind of explain it away as, like, different tribes do different things, but we don't really have a definitive answer on that one.
Yeah. Oh, so the wiki does say it honors Mythal straight up. And it's a Twitter post from Mary Kirby.
Okay. So just on the surface, let's talk about what it is. So it is a facial tattoo. Usually they're pretty intricate. And they are worn by most, not all, but almost all Dalish elves. So getting into the application of the Valisleen, it's a lot more than just getting a tattoo. So I could go out, and in fact, I have gone out on a whim and walked into a tattoo parlor by my house and gotten a tattoo on the same day. I could make a tattoo appointment for something frivolous that doesn't mean anything that I like, sure, but you know, whatever. I could just go out and I can get a tattoo any day of the week whenever I want to. That is not what Valisleen is. Valisleen is very different from that. So it is a tattoo, but I want you listeners to kind of discard notions you have about like what it would be like for us in the modern day to go and get a tattoo. And when I say us, I mean just general, the majority of the population. Because there are some societies and cultures in our world that have sacred tattoos. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about just like in general American society. That's the kind of tattoos I'm talking about. So The application of the Valisleen is a really important coming of age ritual for the Dalish, which means that it is a sacred process. Typically, the application of the Valisleen would occur in late adolescence, so around the age of 17, 18, 19, which is also when, in our context, people become adults. So that age, that kind of late adolescence, is a pretty common time for coming of age rituals to happen. It's also when, you know, graduation happens or you might get your license. Like, these are coming of age rituals. The Valisleen is similar. So what they do to prepare to receive the Valisleen is they meditate on the ways of the Evanuris and on their people, the ways of their people, the Dalish. Now, a lot of times they'll meditate on, like, if they've chosen to get Valisleen for Mithal, they'll meditate specifically on teachings or sayings of Mithal that they know. But they also purify the body and skin and take care to prepare themselves emotionally and physically. The keeper is the one that applies the Valisleen. And when they go and they get it, it's all in complete silence. So usually if you go to a tattoo shop and you get a tattoo here, you're going to talk with your artist. You're going to make chit chat. That is not the way it is done in the Dalish communities. It's done in complete silence. And even any cries of like pain or discomfort or any other kind of noise like that is interpreted as weakness. And so if the elf who's getting the Valisleen can't tolerate the pain, then basically it's very much viewed in the Dalish as like, okay, well, if you can't take the pain, you're not ready for the Valisleen. And that means that you're not ready to take on the responsibilities of being an adult. So I have a few things to follow up on this point. So in addition to this kind of idea that if you are experiencing pain and can't be silent, that means you're not ready to be an adult. The keeper also has the authority to stop the ritual if they decide that the elf who's receiving the Valisleen is not ready. So there's kind of two different ways that the application of the Valisleen can stop. Now, it's really, 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 really important for me to emphasize that this is not shameful. This is not necessarily seen as like something you would be punished for if you're unable to take the pain that comes along with the Valisleen. And the Codex even acknowledges this. It says that the keeper may stop the ritual if they decide that the one gaining the Valisleen is not ready. There is no shame in this, for all children are different and our ancestors once took centuries to come of age. And so that's something that I really, really want to emphasize here and talk about, because I think a lot of times when we look at the Dalish, especially in light of Dragon Age Inquisition, we think, oh, these people, they're so severe and they're horrible to their children. And if they have too many mages in their tribe, then they kick them out and they're cruel and like want to go back to being slaves. And like all of this about the Dalish is very much seen as they are a severe people. And I definitely think they can be all of those things. But at the same time, this is an instance where they're not just that. They also treat their children with compassion as any and every people group do. So it's just an important distinction to make, because we could very, very easily take this whole, okay, if you can't take the tattoo in silence, you're not ready bit as cruel. And sure, it can be interpreted that way, but the Codex and Dalish make very clear that that's not that's not what this is about.
Yeah, just because like there are times like you're supposed to show, like you said, very much like you're supposed to show pain or do any of this does not mean that there's not like compassion that is had for there. And I'm sure that there's stuff we don't know where as they begin talking about the Vaseline with young elves, that they coach them through this and they teach them and they say this is an honor for our people. Like there is pain in that, but like I could very much see them using this like our people have had a painful history and this is a way mm-hmm. that we honor that.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that too. So there are a couple other things I want to talk about. The application of the Vaseline is done with sacred ink. And as you can kind of tell from all of this information, the application of the Vaseline in and of itself is a sacred religious practice. It's not something they just do because they've always done it. Like it is a sacred practice to them. And if you want to debate Solus's claims, like absolutely, we will talk about that later. But when we're talking about the Dalish, it's so important to remember that this is a cultural practice that is sacred to their people. And by taking it away is taking away a pretty big part of their culture. And that's painful. Let's compare the Vaseline just a little bit to other sacred religious practices that also may be coming of age rituals. So you can think of a bar or bat mitzvah in the Jewish tradition. Usually these occur around the age of 13. You can think of First Communion, which would be something in the Christian tradition that's typically a little bit younger. But another one that might be a little bit more accurate, usually again in adolescence, is the confirmation into the Christian church. This is a period where they get to join the church and, become a religious person for themselves. I think that's pretty similar, but there's a few other traditions that I think are even closer to the Vaseline. And that is in a lot of Native American tribes, especially in some of the Alaskan Native tribes, there are these practices of receiving facial tattoos. And they all have different meanings. And so I don't want to speak on anything with specifics because I personally am not knowledgeable enough about any of that to make any declarations or statements. But it's important for us to know that there are tribal communities out there that practice a very, very similar tradition of having facial tattoos that have different meanings in their society.
I think that's a real fair assumption. And it's the thing about like understanding that this isn't just like a trend or something fashionable, like it's fashionable to part your hair this way. No, this is a sacred cultural thing, similar to lots of cultural things. I think of another thing of like, in a sense of like distinguishing you, like in the Hebrew Bible, a lot of the like fashion choices are to distinguish them from the other people that they're around.
Yeah. And I think that perfectly ties into kind of my last little discussion point about the Dalish view of Vaseline. And that's that the primary functions, like why do they actually do it? Well, you may think that it's to honor the Evanuris, and that's not true at all. The primary functions of the Vaseline are twofold, as a coming of age ritual, which we've also already talked about, and as a symbol that the Dalish are different and distinct from the other races and will never again sacrifice their belief system. Those are the primary functions of the Vaseline, not to honor the Evanuris. That is a pretty specific, in-depth thing. It's not just something that's you can find on the surface. And so I think that it makes Solus's desire to remove a romanced inquisitor's Vaseline so much more impactful, so much more of a difficult decision. And I should also add, you brought up the point of like the Vaseline is not a trend, and it's absolutely not. But when we're playing the game, we're very much looking at it as like, oh, this one's so cute, or oh, this one really fits my aesthetic or my vibe for this character. And that's totally fine. Like, don't feel like I am telling you you can't do that. That's totally fine because we're playing a game. But when we think about it in universe, like, it is not just what's the cutest one for the actual elves. And that's important to remember when we're talking about this.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. I know that we're going to talk about Solas and that decision. And I think that the decision on what you do there, I don't think there's a black and white answer, really. And we'll talk about that in a minute, which is a good way of a little like teaser. We could go to our mid break and we'll come back and continue our conversation.
Sounds great. Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So you like to read? What's wrong with that?
It's frivolous. There are more important things for me to do.
That's just her favorite.
Nobody asked you, Tevinter.
I couldn't finish the last one you lent me. I actually feel dumber for having tried.
It's literature. Smutty literature. Whatever you do, don't tell Varric.
No offense, but might I try? I've got a quick hand, after all. Ha, let's see. Oh, when was the last time I slipped my hand into some dark hole? I remember a long story, that.
You hurt my head sometimes, Solas.
Yes, I have been known to do that.
Welcome to the middle of the show where we talk about all the things going on with podcasts that are not the lore of Dragon Age. And so here we thank our patrons. Thank you to our first patrons, Lisa M. and Genesis. And also welcome back to the Wesbotron as back at a First Enchanter tier patron. Thank you for your support and we're glad to have you back. If you want to join us on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/dalorecast. If you can't support us, we totally get that. Another great way is leaving us comments and reviews. If you leave us 5 stars and kind words, we'll read them out on the future episode of the show. And I have a review to lead from the Duchess of Montsimard herself from Apple Podcast and says, obsessed. I'm currently going through the period of obsession over Dragon Age lore. I've played all the games, read and watched all the tie-in media. I'm currently going through every codec entry from the games. That's an accomplishment. And then after that, I still learn new lore from this podcast with almost every episode. While I disagree with some of the ideas the hosts have on certain lore aspects, mainly Orlais, I love Orlais. The thoughts they share are well-informed and interesting. Keep up the good work. I'll leave you with my favorite DA quote from the girl boss herself. Sitting on my throne, I see every city in the empire. If I must burn one to save the rest, I will weep, but I will light the torch. Thank you so much for that review and for posting that on Apple. We greatly appreciate it. And even though I am one of those Orlais haters, I love that you have found meaning in the game and like Orlais. And I just got two things to talk about is you can come hang out with us on Discord at the Cups Podcasting and More Discord server. Come talk about Dragon Age. Come clown with us as we speculate what news we're going to get in the summer about Dreadwolf. Come talk about all kinds of stuff with us at that Discord, Cups Podcasting and More. And lastly, if you'd like some exclusive Dragon Age lore, Lorecast merch, you can find that at our website. You can get shirts, hats, mugs, hoodies, whatever you want with that. And that's all we have for the middle of the show. So we're ready to get back into the lore.
All right. Well, let's do it.
Abominations are always so awkward at family reunions. Have you ever seen an abomination? They are ugly.
Dorian, those words you say, what do they mean?
What do you mean, like mendicant? Ultimatum?
No arse when you're mad. Vishanti Kofas. You're swearing, I know it.
Vishanti Kofas. It's Tavine, relics of the old tongue. We still use the colourful phrases.
And it means what?
Literally, you shit on my tongue.
You fear barbarians will swoop down upon you.
Yes, swooping is bad.
Okay, so let's talk about Valisleen and Elvenon. So I know that typically in this season, we've started with Elvenon and Arlathon, and whatever we're talking about, we start with them and then move on to the Dalish. But I just felt like it made more sense today, specifically in this episode, to kind of do it in reverse. So we're going back in time to Elvenon because there's a lot that Solas tells us about the Valisleen in Elvenon that we just have to talk about. And I should mention, we know that worshippers of the Forgotten Ones, that they use crimson red ink to tattoo their Valisleen, but we're not really sure when Valisleen originate, like with certainty. So we know, obviously, that there was Valisleen in Elvenon, but we're just not really sure with whom, or if it's one of the Evanuris that started it and then everybody, or if it started with the Forgotten. Like, we just don't know its origins. So keep that in mind. But in Dragon Age Inquisition, Solas makes the claim that Valisleen are not just simply reminders or symbols for the Dalish. They do have a much longer and more sinister history. And so here's a conversation between Solas and Lavellan. Do you want to be Solas or do you want to be Lavellan, Austin?
I will be Solas.
Oh, great.
Your face, the Valisleen. In my journeys in the Fade, I have seen things. I have discovered what those marks mean.
They honor the elven gods.
No, they are slave markings, or at least they were, in the time of ancient Arlathon. A noble would mark his slaves to honor the god he worshipped. After Arlathon fell, the Dalish forgot.
Solas basically says all of this conversation. And I think this conversation is interesting because he says, and I should say this last comment is from a different part of the conversation. It doesn't just happen back to back, I think. So he acknowledges, like, okay, these were slave markings. And then he also says a noble would mark his slaves to honor the god he worshipped. And so it's also kind of like, it's just kind of an interesting context because a noble, just, you know, regular noble person in Elvenon is also potentially forcing his slaves into even more slavery under the elven gods. We're not really sure if any of the slaves were able to choose to have Valisleen for themselves. And we also don't really know if the people of Elvenon and Arlathon, if they truly knew what the Valisleen did when they took it on. I would imagine they had to have at least some kind of knowledge about it, but we don't know. So let's take Solas's comments aside for a moment, because I know, Austin, you especially love to pull out the line that, you know, Solas, technically, we've been told he never outright lies, but that doesn't mean that he's telling the full truth. You love to say that. But if you don't believe, Austin, I'm talking to you specifically, if you don't believe that Solas, if you don't believe Solas's claims that the Valisleen are slave markings, we have actually a lot of other evidence in the lore that corroborates Solas's claim. So Corypheus, interestingly enough, acknowledges Valisleen as slave markings at the end of Dragon Age Inquisition. Abalos and all of the Sentinel Elves have Mithal's Valisleen. If they weren't slave markings, wouldn't at least some of them have different deities? Something to think about. There is also a carved tablet that you can find in the Temple of Mithal that suggests the markings failed. Why? What would there be to fail if it was not some kind of enslaving method? And then lastly, of course, we have the mural, we have the stories and the folklore about Fin'Harel removing the Valisleen, and we do have the mural titled The Lifting of the Valisleen, which you can find in the Forgotten Sanctuary. Why would this ancient art even exist otherwise if there was not something sinister associated with the Valisleen?
I mean, these are all great points. And like my argument in here is like, I don't think Solas is lying because you cannot get this You cannot get this conversation unless you've romanced him.
Okay. What does that have to do with lying, though?
I think that if he just wanted to spread this lie, why wouldn't he say it to a Dalish Inquisitor who is his friend? Why is it only the romance? Because he doesn't... I think there's something about the Valisleen that he does not want someone that he loves and cares about tied to this. Because he'll let a non-romance Dalish Inquisitor keep their Valisleen.
I guess that's a fair point. That is a fair point. But I want us to have just some discussions about Valisleen, because I think that it is a really interesting lore topic. So my discussion question is, if you were Lavellan, would you want to remove or keep your Valisleen and why?
I think this is a really tough question. And I think of the choices that are presented to us in Inquisition, this is one of the hardest. Because I do think Solas is telling the truth about what the Valisleen markings represent. But there is also a reality that exists here, in that the Dalish have effectively reclaimed these markings to mean something else. And I think that one of the errors of Solas and one of his flaws in this conversation is he doesn't view the Dalish experience of the world to be valid or to be elven. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of change that a little bit, but not really. And so I think that Solas, in a lot of ways, I have a gut reaction to be like, no, because I don't think Solas really understands what he's asking and the trauma that would be this revelation and everything for the Valisleen of these things that have for 1,000 years have held this place of significance and maintaining their culture through several genocides. A genocide under Tevinter, a genocide under Orlais, and a continue oppression and enslavement in Tevinter, continue oppression and disenfranchisement in Orlais and Ferelden. Removing the Valisleen is not, it's not a simple decision as, oh, I found out they were slave markings and I want to remove them, because that's not no longer their function. Functionally, in the culture of the Dalish, they are a sacred marking. And so I struggle with this a lot, because sometimes when, if I'm really role-playing a strict Dalish elf, they're going to say no for two reasons. One, because of the cultural significance. And two, because Fen'Harel, well, I guess you don't know Solas is Fen'Harel at this point. But like, if you would find that out, finding out Solas is Fen'Harel and he removed your Valisleen would be devastating for a Dalish elf who is holding true to the mythology, because Fen'Harel is the traitor, is the betrayer, is the trickster, is the one who leads Dalish elves astray. So I think that there's a lot of reasons that I think it is perfectly valid that a Dalish elf would logically say no to this.
I completely agree. I think there are innumerable reasons why a Dalish elf would balk at this decision. And I do agree with you. If it was me in this world, I would say hell no, because you're effectively revoking your ties to your community. Like, if you as Lavellan and your tribe is alive, you go back to them with no Valisleen, they're going to be, what the hell? Like, what happened? Why did you do this? Why are you forsaking us? Why are you here if you've removed your Valisleen? So you're basically revoking your cultural and familial ties. And that's a huge decision. And I agree with you that Solas does not know what he is asking on several levels. But I think the biggest one is that Fen'Harel has always been a loner. He has never really had a family. He has always been an outsider, even among the Evanuris and the Forgotten Ones. He is an outsider. And we know that in his time wandering the Fade and doing all these things, he doesn't really have friends who are people. He has friends who are spirits. He has people he's listened to their stories, but he doesn't have true friends and family. And so I don't think Solas grasps the reality and the devastation of what it would mean to lose your entire family. Now, I know a lot of you Solas simps out there might disagree with me and say, well, you know, he had all these people that he helped get out of slavery, and he had people who lived at his temple, and yada, yada, yada. Sure, that's true. But I do feel like that is a little bit different than your family, the people you've grown up with, the people that you've had, your blood relatives, your chosen family. I feel like someone you've rescued who now lives their life alongside of you, I feel like that's a different context entirely. And so I don't think that Solas truly understands what he is asking Llewellyn to give up.
I 100% agree with that. And I kind of put it akin to, like, let's look at, like, Solas from Solas's perspective would say all the people at his temple, he would say, oh, well, we're all equal. There's no hierarchy. There's no anything like that. And I kind of equate this to Peter Pan in The Lost Boys. Mm-hmm. Peter Pan says, oh, we're all equal. We're all this. But when push comes to shove, who holds the power? Who is making decisions? Who are the people going to bow down? Now, I would like to give Solas the benefit of the doubt in that he would realize this a little bit and say, like, okay, I do have power here. I think that's one of the reasons why he goes into Uthanera, is because he doesn't want to just become another Evanuris and rule over the people and people to worship him. He wants them to find their own way. So I do think Solas understands this to a perspective, but I do agree with you. Like, he is the lone wolf, for, like, that is his role he plays in this mythology, this lone wolf, this person who belongs nowhere and only belongs to himself and is portrayed as only looking out for himself. And I just think that he, while he might have built his own community, he has never really been a part of a community like Llewellyn would have been.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I also think that Solas probably thinks, because he watched the downfall of Elvenon and, you know, got to witness the downfall of many other communities, groups, whatever, via the Fade. I think he thinks he understands, but I don't think that Solas really understands the depth of the loss that the Dalish have experienced, as you're right, under multiple genocides, because at the end of the day, he doesn't see them as real elves. He sees them as pretenders. And so inherently, when you see someone in that way, you are not giving their culture the same standing that you're giving yours. And so I think that he thinks he understands how much he's asking Llewellyn to give up. But in reality, he doesn't. In reality, he still sees the Dalish, he still sees Llewellyn as inferior until she gives up the Valisleen. Because he still sees her as Dalish until she does that. It's not until she gives up her Valisleen that he can really, like, see her as someone who's not just a Dalish elf.
Right. And I think we run into a similar problem with the Sarah romance, in that you cannot romance her unless you're willing to give up a huge part of your culture as a Dalish Inquisitor. And, like, for people who might struggle to understand really what we're talking about, I guess in a lot of ways, like, I and you too probably, Shelby, are sensitive to this, because when we lived up in Chicago, and a lot of times, like, there are ideas about the southeastern United States that people have. And, you know, you and I don't necessarily fit into those stereotypes. And so people would ask us all the time, like, well, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just move up here and do whatever? And the truth is like, we didn't want to leave everything that we had ever grown up knowing. We didn't want to, because we liked what we had grown up knowing. There were parts of it we didn't like that we wanted to change, but there are core elements that we wanted in our life. And so I think that's as comparable, but it's comparable.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of really comparable situations here. I think that this situation is with Solas and with the Valisleen. is an opportunity for us to reflect on the things in which we've asked of others. Because, you know, I think a lot of times we are not fully cognizant of other people's context. And, you know, it can be hard for sure to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, but it is important to think about other people, not just yourself, obviously. But there are going to be times in life where we may ask somebody to do something and not realize how important, how sacred it may be in their culture. I think of, you know, I think especially of Native American, Indigenous communities, because there's so many similarities here. And I think of hair for them is such a sacred thing, to have long hair. And there are lots of workplaces and schools and other things, other institutions in the world that ask them to cut their hair. And that is asking them to give up a big part of themselves when you are asking someone to do that. And so I think that's a comparable situation too. But there are also many, many other comparable situations. Obviously, nothing in our world is going to be like a slave tattoo. Like, there is no one-to-one comparison here. But I think that talking about and thinking about this subject can help us be a little bit more cognizant of other people's contexts, for sure. Okay, so any other final thoughts about Valislein before we get into our side character?
No, I'm ready to get into the side character.
Okay, so today's side character is, of course, another Dalish elf. And this one is named Myris. I'm not exactly sure of the pronunciation, but she can be encountered in Dragon Age Inquisition as a friend of Solas. And she appears in the novel The Masked Empire. At the time of Inquisition, she's also the first to keeper Thelhin of Clan Vernon. So let's go back before Inquisition into Masked Empire a little bit. We'll talk more about her in season 8 when we do talk about the Masked Empire in detail. But for now, let's just suffice it to say that during the Masked Empire, Myris and her clan, they encounter Celine, Michelle, Briala, and Felisan running from Sylvan's and Gaspard. Imshale is also present at the time. The keeper, not Myris, reacts by restraining all of the humans and Briala. They refuse to ally with Celine, and all of this creates a whole hell of a lot of conflict, where ultimately Michelle and some of the Dalish warriors get into a fight. Myris steps in and confronts him and reveals that one of the warriors he killed was her lover. And so she obviously holds this against him. This is a major grudge she carries. And so later on, after Michelle releases Imshale, Imshale kills almost the entirety of Clan Vernon, except for Myris and the children. Interestingly enough, she allows herself to be possessed by Imshale in order to get revenge on Michelle. She also joins forces with Gaspard to get revenge on Michelle. This is how Gaspard is able to navigate through the Alluvion network, because he has his elven guide. After all of this fighting, Felisan speaks to Imshale, who is still possessing Myris, telling him that, quote, something bigger is coming to Thedas. And this is what persuades him to leave her willingly, so that we can then meet her in Inquisition, not possessed. So at the end of all of this, Myris does agree to help Briala in her quest to gain freedom for the city elves, though how she's going to do this, we don't know. And then later on in Inquisition, she can be found in the Hinterlands as part of Solas's personal quest, Measuring the Veil. After you dispatch the demons inside and activate the artifact, Myris finds yet another artifact of great value. The Inquisitor can either attack her to claim the item, persuade her with a special dialogue option, either as an Elven Inquisitor or with the Arcane Knowledge perk, or you can have Solas convince her to hand it over. Now, we don't know a ton about Myris. This is about it. Especially outside of the Masked Empire. She makes such a brief appearance in Inquisition. But I do think It's extremely possible that she shows up again in Dreadwolf as an explicit supporter of Solas / Fen'Harel. I also think it's so interesting because we very rarely get characters in Dragon Age who are solely motivated by revenge. And she is one who is motivated by revenge and revenge only.
She dressing for revenge.
Yes, sure.
No one likes my Taylor Swift reference.
I heard it.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a one-off thing that, like, I sometimes miss it in subsequent playthroughs of, like, I never take Solas to get there. And then, like, I don't think I've ever found every single artifact in this, like, quest or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like I have.
But it's so interesting, like you said, this character that's solely motivated by revenge. Because that is really... rare. We have characters who are motivated by revenge. And like, in a lot of ways, I think the Kuzland hero Ferelden starts out that way of being motivated by revenge. But then it doesn't end that way.
Yeah, it changes. But we haven't yet seen if there is an end to Myris's story where it may or may not change. Who knows?
Right. Totally fair. But thanks for bringing this side character. This was a great episode with a lot of interesting discussion about culture and stuff in Dragon Age. Lots of stuff leading up to Dreadwolf.
Yeah, for sure. This is one I've been looking forward to for a while. It's very important culturally and, you know, theologically to the Dalish. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you don't have anything else, I think we're ready to wrap it up. So thank you all for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. You can find us on Twitter at DALorecast.
If you have any lore questions, topics to unpack, or side character suggestions, join our Cups Podcasting and More Discord server. It's easily the best place on the internet. You can also support us financially through our Patreon. You can find us there on patreon.com/DragonAgeLorecast.
The Dragon Age Lorecast is part of the Robots Radio Network. For more information about the Robots Radio Network, join the Discord server via the link in our episode description.
If you enjoyed the show or learned something new today, please subscribe, leave us a review, and join the Patreon. And if you enjoyed our intro and outro music, give a big thank you to Pipe Man Studios. Thank you, Pipe Man. Thanks again for listening to the Dragon Age Lorecast. We'll see you next time.
How well do you know your video game lovers?
Have you ever wondered how your video game bays stack up against all the other delectable digital dates?
I'm Genesis, the girl whose motto in life is love, laugh, tequila. And on Two Girls, One Ship, we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer.
And I'm Vervada, the hopeless romantic cat lady and lifelong gamer.
But you should know that our podcast centers on character and romance analysis and doesn't shy away from exploring the fun of physical connection.
Or from the deep emotional connections built between two characters, using specific in-game dialogue and the overall narrative journey. So join the Two Girls, One Ship shipsters, and remember,
beauty is in the eye of the controller.